Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Prognosis. I'm Laura Carlson. It's day 96 since coronavirus was declared a global pandemic. Our main story? Virus rates are jumping in U.S. states that began opening up over the last month. And recent protests in cities around the country have experts worried cases will surge in those centers. So, is a second wave of the virus inevitable? And did the first ever end? But first, here's what happened in virus news today. In Beijing, there are worries about a new outbreak. The city locked down 10 residential compounds in the northwestern Haidinju district on Monday after finding coronavirus cases at a nearby market. The cases are linked to the nearby Xingfadi wholesale market, which has been the epicenter of the new cases. China's vice premier, Sun Chunlan, said at a meeting Sunday that the risks are high for Beijing's coronavirus resurgence to spread because so many people have visited the Xingfadi market. The U.S. is likely to keep a ban on travel from the United Kingdom in place for months. Anthony Fauci, the top U.S. infectious disease expert, told Britain's Telegraph newspaper to expect travel restrictions to last for months, and possibly until a vaccine is available. Fauci also expressed hope one or more vaccines being developed could be ready by the end of 2020 or 2021. Close to 4 million UK citizens normally visit the US each year. The US, with some exceptions, banned travel from China, the UK, and the European Union. In May, it added Brazil, as cases spiked there. Finally, the U.S. is seeing signs of a resurgence in cases in some areas. Scott Gottlieb, former U.S. Food and Drug Administration chief, said on CBS's Face the Nation that case counts are rising and hospitalization rates are high in some states. That, along with a high percentage of positive tests, suggests there are outbreaks underway. Gottlieb said the rise can be attributed to states loosening their stay-at-home restrictions and starting to reopen businesses.
States like Texas, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, where you see those outbreaks right now, never really reduced the number of cases substantially. They had spread, it was persistent, and now it's flaring up.
And those resurgences are today's main story. Texas and Florida, two of the most populous U.S. states, reported record numbers of new COVID-19 infections on Sunday. The recent surge in those states, and others, has led public health officials to worry that reopening the economy has come at too grave a cost. Between reopening policies, weariness with staying home, and large protests around the country, Americans are moving around and interacting more than they have in months. That poses a real threat to public health. I talked to Bloomberg reporter Emma Court, who has been covering what is increasingly looking like a second wave of the virus.
Osage County, Oklahoma is getting a lot of attention right now. It's the setting of Martin Scorsese's latest film, Killers of the Flower Moon. The movie is based on a book about the 1920s Osage murders, when white men poured into Osage County and killed Osage people for their oil wealth. I'm Rachel Adams Heard, the host of In Trust, a podcast from Bloomberg and iHeartMedia. For over a year, I was reporting a different story, about other ways white people got Osage land and wealth, and how a prominent ranching family in Osage County became one of the biggest landowners here. Their ranching empire was built on land that at the turn of the century was all owned by the Osage Nation. So how'd they get it? Listen to the award-winning podcast, In Trust, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Over the last week or so, we have been hearing a lot in the news about a so-called second wave of this pandemic. Can you tell us a little bit about what we mean when we say second wave?
The term second wave has become very polarizing. Whether or not it is a second wave, I think who you ask, you know, will give you very different answers about it. Is it technically a second wave if the first wave never really went away is the big question everyone's asking. And it doesn't really matter in my book, and I think in most people's books, because the unquestionable trend here is that we're seeing an increase in cases. And there's some concerning trends in terms of hospitalizations as well in some parts of the country. Now, of course, the increase in cases is not unilateral across the board. U.S. cases overall have been rising at about, you know, I think the average over the last week is about 1.1 or 1%. So across the board, it looks fairly stable. But if you then zero in on certain, you know, parts of the country, certain states in particular, we've seen some increases that, you know, public health experts say are concerning. So the states in particular, I think, that are important to zero in here are places like Florida, Texas, you know, Arizona in particular. You know, we've even seen in places like California where, you know, California was really early to respond to the coronavirus, put a lot of restrictions in place. And yet, you know, California's cases are also still going up. But, you know, there are certain states people talk about in particular when they say, you know, we are worried. And it's really that group of sort of Florida, Texas, Arizona that really kind of stands out to people.
And is there anything that we can point to as to why these states are being hit with this surge in new cases versus others?
Understanding what's going on here is more complicated than it sounds. I think a lot of people are quick to rush to, well, it must be because of this or that, right? A lot of people are pointing to reopenings, which are definitely a big factor, right? I mean, if you're in a place and your local businesses are reopening, you're moving around more, you're interacting with more people. Like that's obviously a factor here, but it's not unilaterally across the board clear that that's why some places are having, you know, these spikes in cases. You know, a lot of people ask about protests too. What's the role of protests in all this? And the experts I spoke to sort of late last week said, it's a little early. We're not totally sure what's going on there because it does take some time for people to develop symptoms after being exposed. And then if you think about it, if you're starting to feel sick, maybe it takes you, you know, some period of time to seek out a test, right? To figure out how to get tested. In terms of hospitalizations, that's usually lags even further, right? So the hospitalization numbers, you know, that we see, you know, usually that infection started several weeks earlier, and we only see those hospitalization numbers a lot later. And so that's another reason we're tracking cases, right? Because, you know, cases are a thing that are relatively easy to track and stay somewhat closer to sort of the curve in terms of what's happening in different states relative to hospitalizations.
So it does sound like there's no relationship that we can determine yet between whether or not a state was early to lock down or was strict in its lockdown measures or in terms of its reopening measures. You made the example of California versus Arizona, and it sounds like they had very different approaches to both how quickly they locked down and how quickly they were to open up.
I think it would be even early to be that definitive about what's going on here. Something I would sort of point to in terms of trying to make sense of this trend is, you know, one thing we know for sure relative to sort of the stay-at-home period, the lockdown period, is that Americans are moving around more, right? They're going to more non-essential businesses. They're perhaps even interacting socially more. And we know that that's a risk factor for spreading the coronavirus. So, and the reason we know this is because one really great sort of data set that has been available to, you know, journalists, researchers, public health experts is cell phone data. And so you can tell where people are moving around. And there's very clear evidence that people are moving around more than they were before. Now, there also may be cultural norms, I think, playing into this as well. If you think about, you know, how people are behaving in your area. I think we all see this anecdotally on the street, right? Are people wearing masks? Are they actually wearing them? Are they on their chin? You know, are people hand washing? Are people, you know, hanging out outside of bars with takeout, you know, drinks? You know, are they gathering in groups? Are there restaurants where people are all sitting inside and not wearing masks? So, you know, I think a lot of these cultural factors may also be playing into the spread as well. And that's a little bit less clear. You know, it's harder to measure. It's harder to get a grip on, I think. But it's obviously a part of this whole phenomenon. And we've heard public health officials and states saying, we urge you to wash your hands, to wear masks, to socially distance. But, you know, how well that's actually playing out in different states is hard to know.
And I was hoping you might be able to go into the details of one of these states in particular. What about Arizona? How is that state looking right now?
You know, Arizona is an interesting one because we have seen this sort of trend in terms of the numbers there. And, you know, I spoke with a doctor there who said, you know, I'm really hoping that because it's so hot outside, people will just stay inside in their own homes and air conditioners, you know, and not, you know, be out and about and potentially helping contribute to the virus's spread. But we also know, you know, there were some very well publicized things going on in Arizona around Memorial Day weekend. There were, you know, bars and restaurants in Scottsdale that were, you know, packed with people. You know, obviously, like, we don't totally know at this point. I haven't heard the public health officials in that state say this is what's going on. So, but I did talk to a former public health official in Arizona who's now, you know, does public health kind of advocacy work. And he said, you know, part of the problem going on in the state is that after we lifted the lockdowns, things were going pretty well up to that point. But when they lifted, you know, the stay-at-home orders, when they said you can kind of start reengaging with life as you used to, there weren't really restrictions placed and there wasn't enforcement. So he said, you know, everything was going pretty well until that point. And then it was kind of like, and I love this quote, party on, bro. And so I think, you know, that's the perspective of someone who's been in that, who lives in that state, who sees what's going on, you know, who says, you know, at Costco, people are wearing masks, but at other places, people are not. And I think, you know, that might help put some of this into perspective.
And, you know, again, for those folks that perhaps are dismissive of a second wave theory or that we're actually seeing a slow ramp up in cases, it does seem that they're pointing to that this is simply the result of increased testing in these states, that simply we are able to detect more cases, not that there are actually more cases. Can you go into, you know, the logic behind that approach?
You do hear this point of contention raised, which is that, you know, U.S. testing has for COVID-19 has undoubtedly expanded dramatically since the early days of the virus. And so the question is, you know, were there just similar amounts of cases before that we weren't detecting and now we're detecting them? And that could definitely be a factor here. It's hard to totally know for sure, but we do know that in some of these states that I mentioned before, places like Texas and Florida, the cases are rising at a higher rate than testing is rising. And so it's not a perfect measure, but it does sort of help you zero in on that argument a little bit more. And, you know, we did hear, you know, Florida's governor say this is because of increased testing, but, you know, people don't really agree with him. And I think, you know, the critical factor to consider here is even if we are testing more and we're catching more cases, the unquestionable reality is that there are still cases of COVID-19 in the U.S. The more people have COVID-19, you know, the higher the levels are in an area or a state, the more people are at risk of catching it too. And so this is definitely a virus that is still around, that has not disappeared. The virus is still very much with us. And I think that's the question that we all have to really be thinking about is, you know, has it been tempting to believe that the virus has gone away if you don't know anyone who has it? Just because people are tired of what's been going on for the last several months, it's not something I think anyone is enjoying. But the reality is the virus is still very much with us. And that's what these numbers should tell us. And the other reality is that public health officials have to decide how to respond to these numbers. And this is going to be a pretty critical time in terms of seeing, you know, are states going to put pausing reopening on the table the way that Oregon did? You know, we don't know where things are going to go right now, but we have heard, you know, New York's governor, for instance, saying, you know, New York is actually right now in a really good place in terms of the virus. But, you know, he said, we're getting complaints about behavior. If things are bad, we can roll back restrictions. That's definitely an option. And I think that's something that, you know, how this pans out will be playing out across the United States, you know, this week, in weeks to come, and potentially for a long period of time until there are better treatments and vaccines, vaccines at all available for this virus.
That was Emma Court. And that's our show today. And for coverage of the outbreak from 120 bureaus around the world, visit Bloomberg.com/coronavirus. And if you like the show, please leave us a review and a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It's the best way to help more listeners find our global reporting. The Prognosis Daily Edition is produced by Topher Forges, Jordan Gaspure, Magnus Henriksen, and me, Laura Carlson. Today's main story was reported by Emma Court. Original music by Leo Sidran. Our editors are Francesca Levy and Rick Schein. Francesca Levy is Bloomberg's head of podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Osage County, Oklahoma is getting a lot of attention right now. It's the setting of Martin Scorsese's latest film, Killers of the Flower Moon. The movie's based on a book about the 1920s Osage murders, when white men poured into Osage County and killed Osage people for their oil wealth. I'm Rachel Adams Heard, the host of In Trust, a podcast from Bloomberg and iHeartMedia. For over a year, I was reporting a different story about other ways white people got Osage land and wealth, and how a prominent ranching family in Osage County became one of the biggest landowners here. Their ranching empire was built on land that at the turn of the century was all owned by the Osage Nation. So how'd they get it? Listen to the award-winning podcast, In Trust, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.